names. Mulan or Aladdin?
Aladdin.
Last one. Larry David or Jerry Seinfeld?
Larry David.
Really sort of took the piss there with the amount of time you took.
No, you asked me.
You're not allowed to think.
But what? Why?
I told you not to think.
I have no opinion about Attack of
the
Clones.
It's about gut. It's about gut.
I've not seen.
You disrespect the game, and frankly, you disrespect yourself. I'm sorry, guys.
I can't give you an answer.
I'm sorry to the audience.
There is no gut feeling if I've not seen the film.
Dalmatians, no good. You heard it here first.
The live action
sequel to 101 Dalmatians. I didn't think I'd have to explain that to you, but here we are.
They might have made a.
Oh, is there an animated 102 Dalmatians? I don't think so. 101 Dalmatians, great. You got.
Is it great? Is it great? The live action.
Oh yeah.
Is it?
You know what?
It's not.
I've
great.
Not seen it since I was, however old I was when it came out. Glenn Close
gets stuck in a big slice
quite
of cake.
A defining
at
role.
The end.
Yeah.
Said,
Hugh Laurie. Hugh Laurie's yeah, in Hugh there Laurie as Jasper
and
Horace.
Johan Griffith.
Johan Griffith?
And Jolie Richardson.
No, that he's in 102. Johan Griffith is in 102. It's Jeff Daniels in 101.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it Jolie? It's not Jolie Richardson in the first one?
I
then?
Think it's Jolie Richardson in the first one.
What,
I don't know.
She kept 101 Dalmatians, but she got divorced.
I bet it's a recasting.
You're right, it is Jeff Daniels.
Yeah.
And then 102 Dalmatians.
Is with Johan Griffith.
Griffith. I think
Jim
I think
Carter in
I
there?
I think it's Griffith.
Griffith and Tim McInerney.
Oh,
sorry,
hang on,
I said
though.
That really slowly.
Hang on, I don't see any Jolie Richardson in there.
Oh, it's Alice Evans.
Alice, who?
Who, yeah.
Not which I read as Alice Eve, but no. Alice Evans, of course, famously married. Married to Johan Griffith.
What a revelation.
Between 2007 and divorced this year, sadly. Hang on. Where did 102 Dalmatians...
This just keeps turning.
There's more twists to this. 102 Dalmatians came out in the year 2000.
Whoa.
Which means that, I guess, Johan Griffith and Alice Evans dated all that time. And then 2007...
You don't know that.
I don't know that. But I'm assuming, based on the facts, the dates...
We assume they met. We assume they must have met
on set. We assume they met on set.
Or got close on set.
But I assume they then started a relationship and 7 years later got married. And they have been married until this year.
So 101 Dalmatians, much more closely tied to the Disney cartoon.
Yes.
102, the live action sequel.
Tied to nothing.
Basically tied to nothing. You got Glenn Close as the sort of, you know.
Close.
Close.
Not close.
Close.
Like close the door.
I've always said it close.
No, it's close. Like
Glenn Close.
No,
I feel
no,
like
no,
it sounds
no,
that, more sophisticated.
That sounds. No.
I am Glenn Close.
Glenn Close. Glenn Close. Like
close.
Like I live down the close.
What?
You know, like a road is a close.
I live
down Glen Close.
I would have just said I'm close to you.
Yeah, yeah, okay. But do you know when people live down a close?
Yeah, but
it's an English road. It's an English street. Oh, I live down Tarpery Vale. Oh, I live down Glen
I'd be
close.
Like, you're a bit close to me.
Yeah, no, you, yeah, I wouldn't say you're...
Do you all think those two are getting a bit close?
A bit close, as you would say.
Close,
no,
yeah.
Glen Close. Anyway, why did we... You lost my train of thought.
We were... It's 102 episodes.
Right.
102 Dalmatians. We've just realised it's quite an extensive recast, apart from Glenn Close or Close, depending on...
It's close.
I'm sure you're right.
I know I'm right, because there's no way that's close. Unless you were like, told me Glenn that it was close. Like Latvian, and it had a little funny accent on it, and it'd be like, Glenn Close.
Glenn?
She's not Latvian.
Close.
I'm
pronunciation.
100% sure she's not Latvian.
Oh!
Don't tell me.
No, she's not. You ready?
Close.
Oh, close. But it went like K-L-O-W-S, like close.
Also, that's a computer. I don't care. Close. Yeah, close. I didn't think I'd have to have this conversation with someone. Welcome to episode 102 of... And I know what you're thinking. Wow, those guys
have lost
100
focus.
And they really went downhill.
Yeah.
Have you listened to the Dalmatians episode yet? Yeah, they've really lost the plot.
As if people are discussing us.
They might do.
Like the
They
news.
Might be WhatsApping amongst their friends. They've shared it too.
That'd be cool.
And they'll be saying things like...
Did you believe what they said?
I haven't caught up yet. Oh, you know what? I stopped listening after they had episode 50.
Can you hear what we said about Five Nights at Freddy's? Which George is reviewing later today.
I've not told James anything about what I feel
and
about.
And I'm also going to be reviewing the Marvels.
Yes.
Multiple.
Mm. And we'll have a bonus this week.
Oh yeah, bonus. Big bonus.
Talking about Loki season 2 in spoiler glory.
Mm-hmm.
I'll also give my quick thoughts on last week's films, which was The Killer and How to Have Sex.
Yeah.
Which I've both now seen. Lots of films out at the moment. I remember this happened to us exactly this time last year. I'm going to the cinema every night this week.
Yeah. Got we're seeing Napoleon this week, which should be fun.
Next week's episode.
Got Hunger Games, Saltburn.
Are you going to see Hunger Games?
I don't know if it has value to the audience because I don't want to see it.
I have no attachment to that franchise. I wish it well, but I have no attachment.
I wish it well. I saw, as you know, I rewatched one within 6 months
on a bus.
Recording on a bus, and I thought it was good. And I think my opinion stayed the same, which is that the actual everything else is more interesting than the Hunger Games. But I really do think, like, I've watched the trailer for the Hunger Games when I've gone to the cinema, and I really do think that world is desperate to try and tell you it's more interesting than it actually is. Mm. It's so like, oh, what is it for and why do we do it? And, oh, the injustice. And
all I can see from the new trailer is that the guy
the disparity of wealth.
Yeah, the guy looks like Eminem.
Yeah, he's doing that. What's the face look now? The who's it in Scrapper? Jared? No, not Jared Harris. Harris Dickinson. Yeah,
always there. Jared Harris Dickinson.
Jared Harris Dickinson. Sort of like short blonde buzz cut from the Real Slim Shady video. That's so hot right now. Mm. But yeah, I'm like, do people care? Do you guys care? Well, do you want to hear about the Hunger Games? Is it relevant?
Well, when we talked about it at the beginning of the year, I think we mentioned it. Someone did write in. They were like, honestly, it's really good. The book it's based on is really good. Give it a shot.
Hunger Games 1.
No, Hunger Games the new one.
Oh, wow. Right. Yeah.
But, like, give it a shot.
And I was okay.
Like, but, you know.
Peter Dinklage, big draw for me.
Do you really want us to go and see a film that we have no connect, you know, like, or should we go and see something else?
Does that provide value to sort of review it with quite a clean
maybe
slate?
Maybe we should talk about this offline.
Maybe we should, yeah.
But maybe so next week we might have that. Anyway.
Yes, you'll find out.
We've got reviews coming your way now.
That would have been a great one to put on the movie intros round of the quiz.
What name the company?
The Pearl and Dean.
Yeah, everyone knows that's Pearl and Dean.
I don't think they do. I think they know the sound. I don't think they know it's Pearl and Dean.
I think movie savvy people know it's Pearl and Dean.
Yeah, I don't know. I think some people would be like, shit, what is that?
Let's go do review some of those movie films.
Yeah. The Marvels. Sequel to Captain Marvel from 2019. A film that was often described as fine.
Mm.
I think I resented it a little bit for coming out in 2019 after Infinity War, before Endgame. Mm. And Infinity War ended on that really great hangover of half of everyone dying. Mm. And half the people dying.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, you've got the world's attention, biggest film ever, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You've got this really cool halfway point in your story. It would have been so impactful if you had just left it for a year.
Yeah.
But not... Go on.
No, I was going to say, we've had this conversation.
We've had this conversation. I
totally agree with you. It would have been really great. That does represent approximately like $1 billion missing from their balance sheet.
Yeah.
They're never going to do that.
Well, you say that, but I'll talk about this. We'll talk about this in a bit, but the recent slate of Marvel films, if they're not good, they're not running away with the money.
That's true.
Slapping a Marvel logo on it, currently as it stands, based on early reportings of the Marvels, does not guarantee hundreds of millions at the box office.
No.
And definitely not for DC. But yeah, it sort of was there and it happened, and I really wish they hadn't done a thing. And I guess you kind of had to know a little bit about who Captain Marvel was to save Tony Stark at the beginning of Endgame. Whatever. I enjoyed Captain Marvel. I remember I was like, oh, it's actually fine. I quite like enjoy Samuel L. Jackson in this. I think Brie Larson's kind of enjoyable as Captain Marvel. Anyway, this is the sequel many films later to that film, but it's not necessarily a direct sequel to it.
Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. Just that bit about... I watched Captain Marvel, and I remember the post-credit scene where she lands and she says, where's Fury, right? And then it cuts. And I didn't then realise there was another post-credit scene where she like flies through space and like...
God, I don't even remember.
I think that's what happens, because basically when she turns up at the beginning of Endgame, I thought she just happened to find him.
Was she literally on the way from the last credit scene?
Yeah, I think we see her like flying off through space to look for him, or she's given him his coordinates or something.
Right.
I could be completely wrong. But for a long time I thought, oh, she just happens to find him in space. Then people were like, no, that's set up.
And fine, yeah.
Also, sorry, before you get into your review, I have an okay relationship with Captain Marvel, because it was one of those times when the Marvel film really just hit the spot in the terms of I watched it at home.
Yeah.
Very tired, long week, and I was away. And in my old flat, I used to have a sofa that pulled out into a bed, right in front of the TV. And this is when I was younger and I could get away with this kind of wanton behavior. Five years ago, I got two.
It's 2019.
Can I finish my story?
Yeah, go on.
I got two shop bought dirty pizzas with stuffed crust.
Yeah.
And I pulled that bed out and I ate both shop bought pizzas, both, while watching Captain Marvel.
And now you think about the pizza every time you
The whole combination, everything about that evening just hit the spot. I look back now and I think I probably wouldn't enjoy Captain Marvel. I definitely wouldn't enjoy two shop bought pizzas. That would make me feel terrible. But as a moment in time.
Oh, youth.
I didn't do that. That wasn't a regular thing for me. I just really needed it.
You're like, I'm going to have a me night.
Oh, yeah. So Captain Marvel for me, it was great.
Low stakes Marvel and entry Captain Marvel. If I don't like it, whatever.
Put it this way. If you have two pizzas before any movie, you're going to love it.
Could be. They're good pizzas.
These were at the time. Anyway, so, sorry, James.
Cut to us, all right? We're here. We're rolling with it. So the Marvels. Honestly, George, the plot is like so boring just to like describe it aloud. It's just like, not to just jump straight into my thoughts, but I've seen all of the MCU films and some of the shows, okay? The shows I've missed are She-Hulk. I've seen one episode. And the Marvels I haven't seen.
Ms. Marvel,
I haven't seen. And Hawkeye, I've seen an episode of. Yeah. And then recently, Secret Invasion, I've seen an episode of. Really poor form in terms of starting things and not finishing them. But like, I've seen all the films. And there's sort of this sense of like, okay, how much do I need to know to get to the films I actually want to watch sometimes? And usually there's like something quite essential in them. And sometimes it's like, you literally could not have watched this.
Yes.
And you'd be absolutely fine. Or you could spend 90 seconds looking at an article. This is one of those films where like, you really don't need to see it to know about what's happening. It alludes to something in the end that we already know is a foregone conclusion is going to happen. So it's just like Marvel saying, here's another nod for that thing you're very excited for. Go mad.
If you are excited for it.
Okay, so you've got Iman Vellani, who plays Ms. Marvel, who's actually, Kamala Khan, who actually really enjoying this. She brings a lot of light to it. You've got Brie Larson as Carol Danvers, and you've got Tiona Paris is Monica Rambeau, who we saw in the WandaVision series, was doing some magical stuff. Through some sort of mismanage of powers, they get access to this bangle, which ties them up together in this thing where when one of them uses their powers, they teleport to each other's location.
Right.
And it's all this comedy where like one of them's in a fight scene, one of them's at the family home, one of them's over here, and they're using the powers. And now the other one is now in the fight scene. The other one's like bust into the family living room, and it's like, what's going on? Mm. And honestly, the rest of it is so Kree rebellion and society being thing, just talking about stuff that just ultimately doesn't really matter when we're talking about what's important. You've got Zoe Ashton, who is the villain of this.
I think it might be Zoe Ashton. I don't think it's Zor. You said Zor, then I thought that was the character. I am Zor.
Yeah. You said Zoe Ashton.
I believe it's Zoe Ashton.
Thank you very much. Plays, check notes, Dar Ben. Who goes straight to the bottom drawer of Marvel villains, which is saying a lot. Like, she's hanging out with fucking Malekith from Thor 2 and even Ronan. She's basically female Ronan.
What about she hanging out with the stretched face?
They're all having tea together. Just chill. Like, even for, and look, I like Zoe Ashton. I think she's really good, but she's doing what she can with the material she's got. And I think that's true for a lot of it. I was bored watching it, really like mind was wandering, ready to leave. I've really like gone, oh my God, if you did ask an AI to create a Marvel villain and a plot based on all of the films from before it, I genuinely believe a lot of this would come from that product. Wow. It's really quite just depressing and just not interesting to me. And ultimately, I think it just harms Marvel's brand. Mm. Like, you're putting this film out, it's not making loads of money, it's not very good, it visually doesn't look very good. I really think the MCU needs like a whole studio rebrand. Like, you know when you work for a brand and they give you some like brand guidelines of like, here's how we shoot things. Like, I don't think the Marvels or a Marvel movie should look like a studio comedy that stars Jason Bateman and John Cena. Mm. Like, it's just very sort of like vanilla and uninteresting. And I think to even like Man of Steel, which is flawed, I think about, God, how cinematic and beautiful was that film? Even Eternals, which I didn't love,
great.
It still looked really good. And I just like, I'm not saying they should all look the same. Like, I enjoy that James Gunn and Taika Waititi have got their own brand of space punk, which is there. But I look at this and I just feel like Pete Davidson from SNL is going to bust through the wall and be like, oh, look, it's the Marvels. I just like it. What it looks like isn't compelling to me. There's some like whole elements of the plot which are just so side questy and like not relevant, like time wasting. Like, there's this planet where all the characters sing, and if you want them to understand you, you have to sing to them, and there's like a sort of dancing thing.
What hijinks? Wow.
Like, I just it's not good. It's not interesting about Marvel films. I really do think it damages the brand. some of the actors are really giving it a go. It's directed by Nia DaCosta, who I think directed Candyman. I always don't really want to attribute so much of the director's work to this because I just think like it's just like we made it because we said we would. It's been on the list, so let's get it out.
I think what's quite sad is that I hear in your voice is like you don't enjoy
not at all
being this depressed about it. I look at that because also I can tell that. You know, individually, those actors and all that stuff, you want them to come together and make
something
be more than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
I was thinking when you were describing it, it's like you've got a hero whose first film was, ambivalent reception amongst people. So you have a hero, so you have a movie based on a hero we last saw 4.5 years ago.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Well,
the pandemic.
Endgame, you can say.
4.5 years ago. Yeah. 2019, yeah, James, Mr. Yeah. Date Corrector. 4.5 years ago. Pandemic in the middle. Then you've got two characters based off of shows, not movies, one of which was a show 2 years ago in which they weren't even a main character.
No.
They happened to get their powers in the last episode in a really sort of weird, vague way. And in a way, when someone says, oh, I wonder why audiences aren't connecting to it, I'm like, well, what do you expect? Your pull to this thing is really diffused. And you've got a little bit, you've got Captain Marvel over here, a little bit Miss Marvel. And I've been thinking a lot about, like, I think one of the worst things that happened to the MCU was Disney Plus.
Yeah,
I think just diffuse.
I know what you mean.
Because you had like your audience coming together for the season finale that was Endgame. And then they said, what we're going to do now is we're going to move half of it over into this other section where only some of you will move over to. Because not everyone's going to actually take the pull to Disney Plus. But what you've done then, and by continuing the narrative in those stories, is kind of split your audience into two camps. And that's why audiences get confused and detached because they're thinking, oh, well, I haven't caught up with that. I didn't see Miss Marvel. So I
want to be clear. There's not loads I'm missing out on from having not watched some of the shows.
I know, but the impression you get is that there's just this sort of endless iterations that you're not privy to. That there's no sense of, I don't know. I think it doesn't help.
No, and I just like the look of it again. Like it looks to me really unoriginal. But then similarly, we're going to talk about Loki later, and I look at that show and I think it has a really cool and distinct, well-designed look for it, and the color grade, and you could show me a frame of it and I'd be like, that's Loki.
Yeah.
It feels really intentional and distinct. And then I look at this and I'm just like, it's not appealing to me at all. I don't think I'm being like a snob for cinematography. I'm just like, why are you letting such a lack of identity or like even trying to capture a little bit of like the Waititi thing? And
do you think it's one of those movies that was just like, the train was already moving before they thought about stopping it. It was already in motion. Like they greenlit it years ago. They'd already started money on making it. And before they actually thought whether or not this was a good idea, it was like, well, we're about to head into production. We've already done the pre-production.
Like a sunken cost syndrome.
Yeah.
But like you can't, I think they just can't choose quantity over quality. Like I do think it's affecting them. And again, it's the same thing from the 2019 film. It's way more impactful to hold your characters and save those moments for later. Really assess what's happening in the plot and going, okay, does this need to happen to the characters to tell this really overarching story? And unfortunately, it's not that it doesn't serve the greater MCU multiverse saga. It doesn't also work as a film in itself. So it's not like I'm saying it doesn't make sense for the whole series, but it's a great standalone. It's a boring, unoriginal, really just bland solo film. And it also, I just wish it didn't need to be there. And I don't want to rail on it, but I love it when these films are good. And I really think some of the great highs of the cinema watching experience are when these types of films are really great.
But
and I'm just like, why am I bothering to turn up?
It should be better.
It should
when it's got a $200 million budget,
yeah,
it really should do better.
And also, like, I did just watch Loki. We're going to talk about that later. I do believe that Marvel knows how to tell, like, original, sharp, switched-on storytelling. Like, I've seen you do it. You're 33 films in.
Yeah.
You know what makes a good film. Like, why is this happening phase 4 or 5 or whatever we're in into your process? It's just quite strange.
Do you not think there's an argument that it's about you just need... If we've often talked about Marvel as like a TV show, right?
Yeah.
But the way that TV shows survive or at least sustain themselves is because they always have a break in the middle, right? No, sorry, a break over the summer. Let's just take Friends for an example, right?
Right, yeah.
That show will always conclude in May and come back in September.
Yeah.
And that show can rely on a summer in which the actors and the writers and all the creative talent can go away, recharge, rejuvenate.
Miss the show.
Think about how they want to come back and then come back. But this has just been an endless conveyor belt for 15 years and also a treadmill that's increasing with speed.
Yeah.
So it's kind of got to the point where even, the creative juices are exhausted. Your audience is kind of exhausted. Mm. And you're right. Give it a little break. They had the chance to have a break and they're paying the cost for it by not doing that. I do agree. It's not fun to rail on a movie. And, like, you know, Nida Costa is an interesting filmmaker who has made some good stuff, and all the talent involved, you know, fair play to them. But the thing is, it's one of the biggest films made by one of the biggest studios, taking up the biggest amount of space. Like, it's only fair for us to point out if it doesn't work.
And just, I think a lot of, when I've reviewed the last few Marvel films on this, I've said, like, there's a couple I've enjoyed, but a lot of them I've sort of had fairly similar thoughts on. I've always said, well, you know, they're kind of only as good as their last film. But now, actually, when I'm looking at the last 10 films, I want to just go through the last 10 films. So we've got The Marvels, Guardians 3,
liked it.
Ant-Man 3, Black Panther 2, Thor Love and Thunder, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, Spider-Man No Way Home, Eternals, Shang-Chi, Black Widow. So, and then the only one before that is Far From Home. So, like, really, I would say I enjoyed Guardians 3. Spider-Man No Way Home, but even, like, after, and then
I think that's it.
I think that's it. So, like, wow, really, you've had a run of films that I've most... I'm not saying I felt the same way I do about the Marvels. I think my Marvels review is very much fatigued by my other reviews of the last ones. I thought Black Panther was okay. There were elements of it that were interesting, but mostly actually quite generic. So I'm realizing they're just having quite a poor run.
Difficult second album. This is the thing. This is the phase they're in. They've had the big one. Now
it is such a second album syndrome. You're right.
They need they need a big reset. They need something
humbling.
Big. They need a humbling. They need
Eminem's recovery album.
That's it. They need.
So I think next up we've got Deadpool 3 next year.
That's the next one.
In according to Wikipedia,
but
it's a pinch of
back,
salt.
It's been pushed back by the strike. Yeah, I think it's been pushed to
July 6, 2024 is what it's showing us. We've also got Captain America Brave New World.
That's also been beset pushed. By delays.
Yeah. We've got Fantastic Four, Thunderbolts, Blade. God, Blade is apparently in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
I do think, like, separately, the show, I did, like, before, again, very unique circumstances with a very amazing, lots of amazing things coming together to make the Avengers 3 and 4. I look at the structure of that team, and I'm not sure who I'm really, like, leaning on as a hero to be, like, they're going to take the story forward. Spider-Man's in a very interesting place where nobody now remembers who he is, right? That's quite interesting. Could be cool to happen.
They remember Spider-Man. They don't remember Peter Parker.
They remember Spider-Man, not Peter Parker. Sadly, we lost Chadwick Boseman, and I really think he would have been primed in a world before Black Panther Wakanda Forever came out. I feel like he would have been primed to take on that Captain America role.
Yeah.
I think you could also say that Captain Marvel would have taken on that Thor role as, like, an outer space being with amazing godlike powers, Superman-esque powers. But I don't really see sort of the Black Panther replacement really holding the center of gravity. I don't really know how Tom Holland's going to come into it, especially because he was, like, tutored by Iron Man. Like, I get the sort of step up and be a leader thing. I look around and I think Thor's running out of steam.
Guardians are gone.
The Guardians have basically been sunsetted. I don't know if they'll maybe come in for, like, a nice hero moment.
I think they'll maybe get only, because they said Star-Lord will return, so you'll probably only get Chris Pratt.
You got Doctor Strange, who's quite an authority figure, but he was also very preoccupied with, like, the mysterious things beyond our world. So, like, is he a good lead? Do you know what I mean? Like, where do we go? Like, Thor kind of needs
I think die.
Die, probably. Like, Kang should just off him in the beginning and just be like, oh, yeah, I killed your mate.
Ant-Man.
Like, he's a nice presence. I enjoy him. His last one was properly...
God.
Yeah, that was one of the worst ones.
MODOK, that was it. MODOK, that was the name of the stretch.
MODOK, yeah, oh my God. Like, they need to have a brand guidelines where they look at MODOK and a big X next to it. Like, here's what we... And then, like, other references include Spy Kids 3D. Yeah. Like, here's what we don't have our films look like. And then they need to show, like, what the films do look like. And so any director can basically get this brand pack.
I think we should also just say, though, I know we are criticizing the way that Marvel... We're talking about the way Marvel looks as a whole piece. We're not criticizing VFX artists who we absolutely know are under incredible
many
amounts
reports
of stress and strain and rush, have been made to rush projects, work overtime on projects.
Really, really not impressed with CG in this as well.
Yeah, put through the mill. So when we say something looks terrible, we're not specifically targeting VFX.
No.
It's a much grander kind of top to bottom
an
structural
approach
problem.
To like how your film looks and the type of story you want to tell. The whole aesthetic of it. That's where I'm at.
James, thank you for your review of the Marvels. If you guys have seen the Marvels and you disagree with James or would just like to share your thoughts, please email in to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com.
And I'm sorry it's not really fair to sort of for me to sit here and talk not that much about elements of the film specifically in terms of the plot and why it doesn't work, because really my impression is that the film is not interesting in the first place. So I'm not, and it just, for me, is way more of a commentary on the MCU as a whole. So it's not really getting my attention. I'm really not going to think about it ever again. I'd never rewatch it. But George, another film that's out this week.
Yes, let's do
Five Nights at Freddy's.
Absolutely. Five Nights at Freddy's, which, compared to the Marvels, has actually done quite well at the box office. It's had a kind of positive reception. Five Nights at Freddy's, if you weren't aware, which I was not, based on an existing
point and click
game. Yeah, absolutely, video game that has a huge following, deep committed following to it, that has expanded the lore and the mythos around Five Nights at Freddy's. Mm-hmm. Five Nights at Freddy's is set at a abandoned pizzeria called Freddy Fazbear's.
And here it's like a Chuck E. Cheese equivalent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's defined by its mascot, which is an animatronic humans, probably like 9 foot tall animatronic bear, and his cohort of an animatronic hen, an animatronic bunny, etc. And a bit like in the video game, where I believe you play a nighttime attendant security guard watching monitors, trying to adjust the lights and security cameras, because lo and behold, these animatronic animals that have been stood on stage in this abandoned pizzeria come to life. And James, they are killer animatronic animals. And that's the kind of premise of the game and the premise of the movie. Mm-hmm. The movie has Josh Hutcherson from The Hunger Games. Haven't seen him in a while. Hey, Josh.
And Zathura.
Was he in that?
I think so.
Oh, wow, okay. And he plays the central character of... I've forgotten his name, who is a security guard who loses his job at the beginning. And Matthew Lillard plays this career counselor who, I'm just always like, whenever I see Matthew Lillard, I'm like, you are better than Shaggy, aren't you? You are so much more interesting than just playing Shaggy. Yes, Every time I see him and stuff, I'm like, yeah, you can do more.
Yeah.
Anyway, Matthew Lillard says, well, I've got a job for you. It's only nights, but it's at this abandoned place, but it's very simple. Just make sure no one gets in and just watch the monitor. And Josh Hutcherson reluctantly agrees to do it. He's looking after his sister, who's much younger sister, and he's having this sort of custody battle with this sort of very villainous Cruella de Vil-like, actually, aunt. Oh. And yes, you have this kind of kooky, kind of tongue-in-cheek premise at its heart of these, you know, grotesque, smiling animatronic animals that we know come to life in the night while Josh Hutcherson is there being the security guard. So I went to see it with a couple of mates, and it's funny, obviously you and I didn't really talk about these movies that we've seen separately this week, and I didn't know what you were going to say about the Marvels, because the thing with Five Nights at Freddy's is that it is absolutely terrible. It is by far, I think, the worst film I've seen since we've been doing this show.
Whoa.
It is profoundly dull.
Wow.
Stone cold, pulse deadening dull. Okay. It's 2 hours. And if this film had been 90 minutes, I would just about be like, call it quits. But at 2 hours, it takes the bloody biscuit. Okay. Really? So first of all, why is it so dull? First of all, not scary. Not scary at all. You will be in a coma. Your pulse will never raise. Okay. Yeah. Not scary. Okay, well, if it's not scary, what else do you have? Nothing. There is so little things of interest. I was watching and I was thinking of Barbarian, which we loved last year, right? Great, one of the best horror films we've seen in a long time. Yeah. And the thing is about Barbarian, what Barbarian showed is that there are many ways for a horror film, multi-levels, to be enjoyable. Barbarian had genuine, good, creepy scares.
Yeah.
But it also had, like, a bit of shocking gore, you know, a bit of squelchy, horrible, nasty gore. Mm. And as well as that, it had a good sense of fun, a good sense of playfulness, a good sense of humor, kind of a sick sense of humor. And I was thinking about other horror films I've seen. So It Follows, which is actually quite a serious film, is very playful with its premise, even though it's not a very humorous film. Evil Dead Rise, which I reviewed earlier this year, not a film I really liked, that was very generic, but it had gore, 18 rated violence in it. When it wanted to get nasty, it got nasty.
Yeah.
And the same with Scream 6 earlier this year. Not a scary film, but incredibly fun and funny and, had gore to go with. This film has absolutely none of that. 0-0-0. The plot is just unbelievably dull. It is incredibly slow, sorry, to start. The film it just takes its sweet time to get anywhere.
Really?
So Josh Hutcherson, you think about this premise, this central premise, I think, actually has good horror bones.
Yeah,
to
totally.
It, right? But the film wastes so much time on this other plot about how Josh Hutcherson lost his brother when he was a kid. He was kidnapped, right?
Oh, give a shit.
And he's going through like dream therapy. He's teaching himself dream therapy that when he goes to sleep, he's trying to revisit the scene of his brother being taken away in Nebraska in like the 80s. And you would not believe the amount of time, James, we spend in this forest of his childhood trying to find this child. He's there and these children show up and you're watching thinking, but when are the killer animatronic animals going to come into this? And they're like, oh, in a minute, but Josh Hutcherson is sleeping. So anyway, when the movie finally decides to be about the killer animatronic animals, it's incredibly tame, not scary, not exciting. There's a kind of a scene of a kind of like...
They look scary to me.
You won't feel that way if you saw it. Yeah. After there's like a kind of a break-in scene with some, you know, some hoodlums and some hooligans, and the animatronic robots are going around, and the interactions are incredibly tame. This film's a 12A, but honestly, some of the scares play like a PG.
Really?
And you're thinking, God, is that it? And there's one death, I would say, you sort of see in shadow, in silhouette. But I'm thinking, you really need to give me more. I'm saying, if you're not going to be scary, you've got this really kind of tongue-in-cheek premise at your heart. Can you not be more playful with this? Can you not be fun with this? Or can you at least make the kills really nasty, just to give me something to go on? I honestly have not seen...
12s can be scary too. It's not an excuse. Loads.
I have not seen a film in such a long time that has offered so little. Has given me so little to work with. It was incredibly hard to get through this. A real slog. If it was not for this show, James, I would have left. I don't normally do that in the cinema, but I would have gone to the pub with my friends.
Yeah.
I turned to my mate on the right. He fell asleep within 20 minutes. And I was like, you lucky bastard.
Yeah.
You lucky,
blissful
lucky
unconsciousness.
Bastard. And he woke up about half an hour from the end and was like, oh no, it's still on.
Really?
My mate to the left, we were really struggling.
Have I met that mate? Is that
Ollie?
Yeah.
And we realized we were like, we started counting how many nights at Freddy's we had left. So I was going, he was like, I think we've got two nights left. I was like, no, we've got three nights at Freddy's left. I mean, that some of the creative decisions in it are genuinely baffling, particularly in the last third. They do things which, to use a frank British phrase, really took the piss. This is the thing, if it had been 90 minutes, I would have called it quits, but making me sit there and go through some of the ludicrous, really dumb-headed stuff it tries to pull in the third act, I was like, you are joking. You are taking the piss here. There's a montage sequence in the middle where they use the song Connection by Elastica. I'm trying to talk around it to not be too spoilery, not that there's much to spoil. And it sort of happens and I'm like, what? Both me and Ollie looked at each other and I was like, this is like a scene out of like Toy Story 5 if they ever made one. I was like, what is this scene doing in this movie? And it just made it very, very apparent that this movie has no idea what it wants to be, has no idea how to play. The whole film is played incredibly po-faced, incredibly serious. And I was like, really? You got an animatronic bear. You got an animatronic teddy bear. You're not going to liven this up a bit. But yeah, this sequence in the middle, I mean, I can't talk about it without spoiling it. And I want to be respectful enough to people in case they want to see it. Right. But it is so ridiculous. There's also a bit where after the those hoodlums break in and smash up the glass, Josh Hutcherson goes back into work and he starts like tidy up and mopping up and stuff. And Ollie just turned to me and he was like, oh, I love a cleaning montage in a horror film. That's what really works for me. it is one of those things, like, I know we say we don't enjoy railing on a movie, but we finished this film and we were really annoyed because we were like, this has, at its heart, a perfectly functional horror premise, okay? The game worked. You have an existing IP. This also has a budget. It wasn't made for 20p. This actually has a budget. You surely could have done better with the resources that you have than this. I was thinking of all the Talk to Me, like another good horror film this year. How many times have we seen a horror film that's made for a shoestring budget, but it's actually really effective?
Totally. Okay?
This has really, really no excuse. And I was really, really annoyed by the end. Genuinely, I'm not making this up. My friend, Louis looked at me at the end of the film and I was just stretching my hands.
It can be painful.
Yeah. It is painful to watch something so stupid.
You can tell it's going nowhere and doing nothing.
It was really, really taxing. And I'm sorry, but it's dull, dull garbage. Should do better. F-mark, see me.
In red pen.
Yeah, see me. No good. Detention.
See me.
I genuinely was like, what? I would watch The Nun 1,000 times rather than watching The
Nun. Was pretty bad.
Oh, anything. You know that film I mentioned that I really hated with Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Tobias Menzies?
Yeah.
I think I'd rather watch that on loop again. Mm,
I wonder if The Nun 2 was better than that. It sounds like it maybe just had the edge.
I think, we've seen some crap. And Ollie had watched The Pope's Exorcist with Russell Crowe recently. And he was like 10 times better than this.
Really?
10 times.
Than,
I mean, the dialogue. Oh, the dialogue is so wooden. And you know what? Josh Hutcherson, you should do better as well. I know the script is terrible. But honestly, by the end, it's like I could sense the script supervisor stood next to the camera with the script written out on boards, flipping through it so he could read it without learning his lines. Monotone, rubbish, all of it. I just wanted the Bears to just eat everyone
and get it done with.
Fuck off. It was so infuriating.
Guys, we're coming in hot today.
Sorry.
These rarely happen.
Garbage.
But we are sorry.
Absolute that is garbage.
The worst film you've seen in 2 years, you'd say.
I'd say, yeah.
Or even longer, to be honest.
Mm. The worst film I've seen recently, straight after the Julia Louis-Dreyfus one. But I definitely, in the time we've been reviewing these films on here, I mean, I've seen some stinkers.
It's definitely the most animated you've been about bad performance in a film.
It's that thing again, it's like you can see a bad film, it's like whatever, but I was annoyed because I think it took a fairly wide goal. It had a pretty, I know it's really hard to make a movie, but like this had a pretty clear run up to the goal. Yeah. You had a pretty okay setup. Come on. Mm. Sorry.
I think I was most irritated about Avatar, Way of the Water.
Yeah, you did get incensed. Because that
was, I expected, I think that film should do way better than what it was. Mm. I'm quite disappointed, it's completely separately, quite disappointed that it had the world's attention and the budget, and it had that much time to make a sequel to a very like safe film. And it did that, which I thought was so boring. And it was 3 hours and 15 minutes long. Mm. And I felt way too overstimulated and just quite disappointed. And upset.
Right.
James Cameron.
Yeah, you're like, you expect...
I'm like, really? Like you told a very safe thing to introduce your world, and then you follow up with another like really sort of uninteresting...
And also just on Five
Nature Fest. Yeah, sorry.
People are like, oh no, but there's loads of like hints and clues in there about like the lore of the world. And I'm like, I don't care.
This game from what, the 90s?
It's 2014 onwards.
Fine.
It's just lo-fi.
Right, okay.
But I was like, I don't care. Video game curse. About the stuff. If it worked in the movie, and it doesn't. Terrible. Car crash.
Well, there you go, guys.
Sorry, we've been really...
Yeah, guys, strap in. but guys, if you had any thoughts on Five Nights at Freddy's, if you agreed or disagreed with George, please send us in an email to hello@popkitchenpodcast.com. We would love to read it out on the show.
But I can't say to someone, we watched a real stinker the other day. Go and watch that. Because it's so dull.
It's just that it could be better. Like, similarly with the Marvels, I just finished the Spider-Man 2 PlayStation game.
Right.
Which is a game that is leagues better at making me care about characters than that $200 million film was. And I'm just like, I know this could be done better. I care about this more. This is more entertaining, more compelling. Even though it borrows from loads of other things, I'm like, it's original and fun. And it's like, it's a sequel. And like, that's the movie 33 of MCU. Sorry, I'm just raining.
You know what? You know what would cheer me up? If we read some of our listeners' emails.
Let's do it. Time for the emails.
And now let's read some emails from our sirens all around the globe. Like this first email from Madeline, who says, question for the pulpy boys. Woo. Hey boys, Mads here from Aotearoa.
No, whoa.
Pronounced Aotearoa. New Zealand. I wish I'd read that pronunciation that you broke down for me phonetically.
That was really kind of you to do that.
I read that. I knew it meant New Zealand, but I didn't have the pronunciation ready. Anyway, hi from New Zealand. Hope you're both doing well. I've been listening to the pod for a while now and have really enjoyed your insights into the film world, considering I'm currently studying performing arts and will be graduating at the end of next year, aiming to get stuck into it all.
You know what I realised, both from our emails and from the quiz, is that lots of production creatives, graphic designers,
film adjacent roles.
Yes, yeah, I quite like that. Sorry, as you were.
My question is, what country have you enjoyed seeing the most depicted on screen? And are there any countries that you would want to travel to for the chance to film a movie? Being so far away from the countries that produce huge films, I always find it so jaw-dropping when a film has been shot in New Zealand. We had lots come here over the start of COVID and it was so surreal. Anyway, thanks for such a fantastic podcast to listen to. I was so sad I wouldn't be able to go to the pub quiz for your 100th celebration. I'd say now, if you had turned up from New Zealand, we would have given you first prize straight away. Yeah. That would have been amazing.
You'd have gone a big hug.
I would love to do something like a pub quiz online if you ever think about creating it. Mm. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. Peace out, Mads, Purple Heart. James, countries you've really enjoyed seeing being portrayed.
I've always liked seeing Nepal in film.
Right.
So like recently in The Creator, all of that was shot like Nepal, Thailand, Cambodia. And I've not been to Nepal. And what's the other thing set in Nepal?
Right?
Like mountainous, like Himalayas, like all these amazing hiking trips. Well, you know, the coloured checkered flags. Yes. I always think it's very cinematic. You've got village huts and mountains in the background. Mm. I've always wanted to do that and I've always liked that. And specifically, The Creator did Cambodia and Thailand.
Yeah.
Like the sort of wide landscapes very well.
Yeah.
New York always, but like, you know. Mm. It's all too obvious.
I mean, the thing is, New Zealand is absolutely one of the top ones. I remember there was a film called Slow West with...
Oh, yeah.
Did you
Fassbender.
See that?
No.
Yeah, I saw
I know of the film.
Fassbender, Cody Smith McPhee, and Ben Mendelsohn.
Oh, that's when Ben Mendelsohn was just being Ben Mendelsohn and everything.
And it's a Western, and it was meant to be... It was set in Wyoming, but they shot it in New Zealand, but it doubled up, like, really well.
Yeah.
And it's just... I mean, I've been to New Zealand, and it's fantastic. It is genuinely really, like, the scenery is iconic and stunning. Mm. So seeing it on screen is great.
Also, like, American suburbia, like, twinkly... American suburbia. Mm. I always just want to walk through those like long roads with the repeating trees and the brown leaves.
Like John Carpenter kind of town.
John Carpenter, Hocus Pocus, anything of that ilk.
Yeah, but isn't this also the kind of the way it's filmed though?
Totally.
And
it's
like
idealistic.
Because like Lawrence of Arabia in the desert makes the desert look amazing.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying I want to go to the desert.
Doesn't it sound amazing, but like,
yeah.
Selectively.
Yeah. And be all right. In America,
how much water have I got?
There's something like inherently cinematic about all of America. If you want to get into it, there's like deep academic writing about how America is kind of like a big movie set.
Totally.
And it kind of instills
Hollywood first,
I know
country
this,
later.
This term of main character syndrome is a very new term, but the concept of being kind of like the hyper individual comes through in America. It's basically all around you in the way that America was able to create a place like Hollywood, but then Hollywood in turn then created America.
Yeah.
And it's just this kind of ever built. That's why places like New York are so iconic, because it's basically like a movie set. Also Venice.
Like late 40s, 50s LA, I think would be so cool to like the paper cardboard sets.
Oh.
This post like, you know, Americana boom. I think that would have been brilliant to see.
I think Italy.
Italy
looks great.
Whether
you're doing a film like The Town to Mr. Ripley or Call Me By Your Name, but even if you're doing a car scene
that
chase.
Episode of Normal People.
Yeah, even if you're doing a car chase in Mission Impossible 7.
Yeah,
still look good.
It looks so chic.
White Lotus and Sicily.
Yeah.
Like, come on. It's
the chicest Europe, like Lake Como.
Oh, I love it.
The end of Casino Royale.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mr.
It's technically meant to be Venice, but it's shot in a very famous house looking over Lake Como. You know, at the very end when he like...
There has to be...
Oh, it could be Lake Como.
Yeah, that would be... If they're trying to double for Venice, it just failed.
Also, Anakin and Padme's wedding shot in Lake Como. Meant to be Naboo.
But they Couldn't get the tax credits to go fill in actual Laboon.
Whole disaster with time travel.
Madeline Mads, thank you very much.
This next one is from Max, who writes in titled Baffling Movies. Hello, George and James, brackets James and George.
Yeah.
I've been watching, listening to your podcast for about a year and a half now, and I absolutely love what you guys do.
Get in.
I've been watching film content on YouTube for the best part of 10 years, but have never felt as connected as I do to your show.
Oh,
that's
thank
very
you.
Kind. I love he's like, yeah, I've been watching YouTube for 10 years. You can say
YouTube
that now.
Completed.
Yeah. I'm a 24-year-old Brit living in France. Currently living a master's degree. Currently living in France. Currently doing a master's degree in film studies at Bordeaux Montaigne University. You know what I mean? Film adjacent, very sort of film.
I mean, that's
focused
not film adjacent.
People.
That's film.
That is just film studies. Despite having lived abroad for over half my life, I still gravitate more to English-speaking film criticism rather than French. Even though there are definitely some fine critics over here, your banter, wittiness, local references, and just pure Englishness never fail to make me chuckle and remind me of how much my personality is deeply influenced by British culture. Totally. As in, like, not us.
No, I'm just thinking, like, yeah, because France, the birthplace of Carrière du Cinéma. Is there a question in that?
You just paused for comment.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I thought you were going into something.
Well, I was about to say, like, you know, it's very. That's just very nice of you to hear. And you know, je voudrais parler avec toi en français, mais mon français est assez mauvais. Parlez-vous anglais, s'il vous plaît?
Oh, oui. I recently went down to visit my parents who live a little further down south in the Gers region to spend Halloween together. I'm a big horror fan and it's become a tradition in our household that I sit them down and we watch one classic horror movie followed by a modern picture. This year, I chose John Carpenter's The Thing, brackets one of my absolute favourites,
yeah.
And Malignant, the most recent James Wan movie that was released a couple of years ago.
Yes.
To my delight, they both really loved The Thing and were still very much so impressed and freaked out by the wonderful practical effects and the cosmic horror Carpenter managed to create. Mm. Then I put on Malignant, a movie I had missed when it came out and was desperate to see being a big James Wan fan. I didn't know much going in, only that it was quite controversial at its time of release. Gentlemen, I cannot begin to explain the sheer confusion, disbelief, disappointment, surprise I felt whilst watching this movie. My jaw was on the floor. If either of you have seen it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about in order to not spoil anything. I'll just say that the film is a genre-bending camp horror feature that, in my opinion, doesn't quite know which genre to stick to. Mm. It's messy, spoofy, unscary, and overall unsure of what it means to be. Now, I'm a big fan of Big Swing, but unfortunately, sometimes it just doesn't turn out the way you think. Did you see Malignant?
No, but I know exactly the movie he's talking about.
I've heard of this. I think I know what happens in the end. I think I'm aware of its slightly weird direction. Okay. But does it suck when a scary film is unscary? Is that like one of the most disappointing things?
Five Nights at Freddy's review.
Yeah, but does you know what I mean? Like, that's like the main thing you've signed up for. Like, even bad action films have action. Anyway, my question for you is, have there ever been any movies that you've known very little about going in, maybe some expectation of what the overall tone of the film would be, and been absolutely baffled by the end result? Apologies for the long email, but I've been meaning to write in for a long time. Keep up the wonderful work, and hope you both know how appreciated your podcast truly is. Much love from your Anglo-French siren, Max. Kiss.
You can be our French correspondent, by the way.
Yeah, done. Sorted.
You're the first writer from France. Have I ever gone into a film not knowing a lot of them and been baffled by the ending? I mean, like, I genuinely didn't know what Parasite was about when I went to see it. I just knew South Korean film, big success at
Cannes. Wasn't overhyped to me either.
No, I just knew it was doing very well. I knew it was starting to pick up well on the Oscar circuit.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go see that. I knew it was... I really didn't know. I didn't know whether it was kind of a horror film. I didn't expect the socioeconomic commentary. I just thought it'd be maybe a drama. Anyway, that was great. I wasn't baffled by the end. I was blown away.
I think baffled's a big word, but a film that I really couldn't have told you that it would be like this was Magic Mike.
Right.
I didn't expect it to be like this much more interesting, deeper
character drama.
Wannabe deep. I don't think it was
definitely
that
wannabe, but like, the fact that it was taking so much time to tell that story, I was like, oh.
Also, the way,
baffled,
the way
like, I was like, oh.
It starts as Alex Petiver's film when they just abandons him. It just becomes Channing Tatum's movie.
The fact that it wasn't more of a shallow, not chick flick, but I don't know.
Muscle movie.
Yeah. It's more than that. It's trying to be more than that. It's shot in an interesting way.
It kind of goes back to like our underrated movies thing. Like when you go and watch something, you're like, oh. I didn't realise that Deepwater Horizon would be so good.
Yeah, I think we also forget before anyone had seen Guardians 1, you really had no expectations for Guardians 1.
Mm.
And I know it was in the MCU, but the MCU wasn't that experimental then. Mm. And then you go to see it and you're like, oh, I don't know who these guys are, but like they're really funny and this new style is really different. Again, baffled, not the right word, but like pleasantly surprised by the result from what you expected.
Yeah.
Oh, A Simple Favor. Have you seen that with... Blake Lively and Anna Kendrick. Silly movie, no. But like, you're watching, you're like, what?
Yeah.
Anyway.
There you go. You know what was better than I thought it would be? The Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
I remember seeing Rise and thinking, like, I like it. And then someone was like, oh no, Dawn's like really good.
And it was really good.
And then I was like, really? Dawn? And then I saw it, I was like, oh, this is like really
and then,
good.
And then War was like, okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, this next email.
Can't hate Andy Serkis. He's just good in everything.
Yeah,
it's short though, isn't it?
This next email is from Chris. It says, hi, James and George. Just wanted to write in and say that the pub quiz was great the other night and thought the questions were really well written too. Thank you. Also, coming in second was nice. Thanks again for the View gift card. Woo! Chris, remember meeting you. Lovely guy. Thanks for coming. It was lovely to meet you both as well. To listeners not able to attend, they're as nice in person as they come across in the pod. He's written it down. It's fact. Will you be doing more events like this in the future? Well, watch this space. Mm-hmm. Also, what's your opinion on seeing films solo? I do it quite a lot and I love it, but I find it weird when leaving with no one to discuss it with, which is why I listen to your podcast to get a lot of your opinions. Nice. Sirens on our end, Chris. Something we've talked about, touched on a fair bit, but James, seeing films on your own.
Yeah, love it in two different ways. One, it has a very functional capacity in that like sometimes it's easier to just go and see something and not necessarily have to plan around other people. The amount of films we try and see, it's really good. Also, there is something to be said about taking yourself for a you day.
Yes.
And really.
A date with yourself.
A date with yourself. And yes, while you do lose that immediate reaction of getting to, you know, have fun with someone while you see it and discuss it afterwards, what you gain is like that film really sitting with you and yourself really processing it and just taking yourself to go and see a thing. It's all encompassing, very much more. It can be more absorbing in some senses.
I agree. I really like going. It's up there with my preferred way of seeing a film sometimes.
Yeah.
But I do like seeing films with my friends.
Yeah, of course.
And in a way, they bring different things out of you, but going to see a film alone is absolutely fine and necessary. Like, I'm starting to realize that like going to the cinema is as important for like you and society as like going to the gym is.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very, I think, like societally healthy.
And just to pick something off the menu and just go, I'm just going to go and take myself to do that tonight. And
I'll just lose 2 hours.
Like functionally, like we will go and see big exciting films sometimes together and with friends. Like we'll go and see like event IMAX films together. Like Oppenheimer, we saw it like 4 of us, like you, your girlfriend, my cousin. That's really exciting because you're there and it's like a sense of excitement. And then I take myself to see it the second time to really get a sense of what that film's about. Yeah. And it's like I saw it in the morning and I settled in and they just have very different, equally valuable.
And you don't have to worry about whether, because you know, sometimes if you see a film and the person you're seeing it with is not enjoying it, it can really pull you out of it.
Yeah.
So
I don't need to, you know, sometimes you're like, do you want to see this film? And the person, like, could be partner or friend, is like, who's in it? What's it about? Who directed it? And I kind of am like, I don't want to have to convince you to see this because sometimes I don't even think it's going to be good, but I want to see it regardless. That's it. This last one is from Bennett, who writes into the show.
Oh, Bennett.
Bennett. And says, hi, James and George.
Get off some steam, Bennett.
James and George. George and James. Firstly, congratulations on your 100th episode. I meant to send an audio message for it, but I suppose I'll have to wait until episode 150 or 200. Should we bring the voice notes back? I quite like them.
I think if you really want to send a voice note, just do it.
I hereby declare that if you want to send in a voice note as your correspondence, you have...
Permission.
This could completely change everything. Whoa. The landscape of film criticism is increasingly simplistic and combative. I applaud you two for running in the other direction.
Mm. Oh, combative.
Thank you very much. Yes. Thank you. Combative. Combative. Recently.
Combative?
It's combative? Recently, I saw Priscilla. Recently, I saw Priscilla, which I thought was rather excellent. Please go and check out my review of Priscilla from the London Film Festival from a few weeks ago. I find Sofia Coppola to be an incredible talent, with Bling Ring being one of my unexpected favourites. I truly love how much she loves to let the camera linger on a given moment. Do you know what I mean? When we stay on a shot for a few seconds longer than you would expect, it is paradoxically lending itself to both a sort of realism and dreamlike quality. Generally, she knows how to create a vibe in each of her films. I'm wondering, is there a film or filmmaker that you love primarily because of the vibe? And then he has some other stuff to say.
Let me think on that.
Of the vibe.
The vibe, you watch it just for the vibe.
Yeah, like just they bring an energy and a vibe. Definitely, I need to think about it though.
I don't know if I would attribute that to one filmmaker.
Yeah.
More just to like films in general.
Separately, I know reaction to Oppenheimer was positive, but not quite as fervently as others, which is fair. I'm not here to change your minds. Personally, I think it might be my favorite Christopher Nolan film. I bring this up now because I had recently read the screenplay for Oppenheimer, which is now on sale. As a screenwriter waiting in the wings, reading screenplays has always proved to be worthy education for me. I highly recommend giving it a read if you feel so inclined. It was mentioned briefly on the film's press tour, but in the script, all of the action lines and the color scenes are written in the first person as Oppenheimer, while the action in the black and white scenes is written in the traditional third person. It's unusual, but it did help draw me into the script, and it helped with tracking the structure as well, leading this into an actual question, so I'm not wasting your time. Have you ever read a script for a film you'd already seen? Which script was your favourite to read? Have you ever read a script that made you like the finished film more? Thank you too for your time. Hope all is well in your lives. I'm pretty sure I'll be emailing again once I see The Killer. Take care in the meantime. Best, Bennett.
Thank you, Bennett. To answer your question about have I read a screenplay, yeah, but not for a long time. I did it a lot when I was late teens, early 20s.
Yeah.
I have screenplays on my bookshelf and I can read those out for you. Those are Burn After Reading, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction.
These Criterion Collection.
Diner.
Ones.
No, they're just screenplays. Just
screenplay. Oh, right.
Yeah. Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Diner, Goodfellas, Before Sunset, Before Sunrise. I think that's it. But anyway, I used to read them, and I find it actually quite a useful experience. And every time I've picked up a screenplay since, you know, that you can get Succession as a screenplay, which I think reads better actually in a way. It's really interesting to flick through. I think I would like to do this more, but it's been a while. But the best one, well, obviously the Before films, because that just got so much dialogue in there.
Yeah, I when I adapted Revolution Road as a stage play, I read the screenplay and used that for a lot. But it's quite interesting to read it. But yeah, I've heard that about Oppenheimer. The first person Oppenheimer thinks, which is interesting because he doesn't narrate the film. But yeah, guys, Bennett, thank you so much. We really appreciate you guys sending the emails. Don't forget, if you wanted to send an email into the show, you can do by emailing hello@popkitchenpodcast.com. So make sure you do that, guys. And now, George, it's time to sunset the episode with a game.
Yay!
George, don't forget, every episode of Pulp Kitchen ends
with a game.
With a game. George, today I've got two rounds of two games for you. We are going to do two rounds of this or that quick fire. I give you two things. You have to tell me which one you prefer in very quick fire. No thinking. We've done it before. You're going to enjoy it again. These can be films. These can be actors. These can be directors. These can be... That's about it. That's about it, all they could be.
Got it.
Next, we've got two rounds, back to popular demand from you, of co-star countdowns. This is when I choose an actor, and then I list all of their co-stars, and you have to tell me which film those two actors were in together.
Got it.
But first, this or that, quickfire. You have to tell me which one of these you prefer. George, are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, which one of these do you prefer? Attack of the Clones or The Rise of Skywalker? Quick.
Attack of the Clones, because I haven't seen
Minority
it in
Report
years.
Or War of the Worlds?
Minority Report.
Ex Machina or Nightcrawler?
Ex Machina.
Mamma Mia or Footloose?
I've not seen either.
Batman or Spider-Man?
Batman.
Grease or Mary Poppins?
Grease.
Mozzarella or Parmesan?
Parmesan.
La La Land or Moonlight?
La La Land, maybe.
Oscar Isaac or Adam Driver?
Adam Driver.
Michelle Pfeiffer or Julia Roberts?
Julia Roberts.
Scarface or Heat?
Heat.
Silence of the Lambs or Seven? Quick.
Seven.
Mulan or
Silence
Aladdin?
Of the Lambs. Seven, I've seen it more times.
Mulan or Aladdin?
Aladdin.
Last one, Larry David or Jerry Seinfeld?
Larry David.
Really sort of took the piss there with the amount of time you took.
No, you asked me.
You're not allowed to think.
But what? Why?
I told you not to think.
I have no opinion about Attack of
the
Clones.
It's about gut. It's about gut.
I've not seen.
You disrespect the game, and frankly, you disrespect yourself. I'm sorry, guys.
I can't give you an answer.
I'm sorry to the audience.
There is no gut feeling if I've not seen the film. And also, I'm set. Also, I
never saw Mamma Mia.
I think I would take Moonlight over La La Land, but I've only seen Moonlight once.
Right.
This is why it's hard, James.
I know it's hard. You never saw Mamma Mia?
Nope. Seen it on stage.
Okay.
But I would watch it. I missed it.
You missed the hype.
I was watching The Dark Knight in cinemas.
I saw it with my mum.
Good. That's probably the right way to see it.
Right, George, you ready for your next round of quickfire? George, quickfire, tell me which of these you prefer. Harry Potter or Star Wars?
Star Wars.
The Coen brothers or the Safdie brothers?
Coen brothers.
Seth Rogen or Will Ferrell?
Will Ferrell.
Inside Out or Coco?
Coco.
The Dark Knight Rises or Tenet?
Dark Knight Rises.
Good Will Hunting or Requiem for a Dream?
Requiem for a Dream.
The Departed or The Wolf of Wall Street?
Wolf of Wall Street.
Lasagna or Spaghetti Bolognese?
Spaghetti Bolognese.
Interesting. Knocked Up or Superbad?
Superbad.
Michael Keaton or Val Kilmer?
Michael Keaton.
Gone with the Wind or Gone Baby Gone?
Gone Baby Gone, not seen Gone with the Wind.
Stranger Things or The Crown?
Stranger Things, actually.
Jurassic Park or Taxi Driver?
A Taxi Driver?
There Will Be Blood or The Truman Show?
Oh, James, I guess There Will Be Blood.
The Godfather or Shawshank Redemption?
You know, I guess it's probably Godfather.
A couple of hard ones in there, weren't they?
But splitting hairs. And it's also hard. Like, it's very hard to measure big things with a small measurement, which I guess is the entire point of this game.
Totally.
Some of those questions don't even relate. Like, There Will Be Blood.
Gone with the Wind or Gone Baby Gone.
I like the silly ones. The sillier they are, the funny.
The silly ones are good. You said Wolf of Wall Street over Departed.
Well, I actually probably would. The thing is, I've just seen The Departed a lot.
Yeah.
And so I kind of know all the beats of it. Whereas Wolf of Wall Street, because of its length and its speed, I think you can kind of get more out of it.
Right, yeah.
You know, like, you know, The Departed, missed. I'm like, well, I know what happens at the end. Sure, it's a rewatch. Martin Sheen.
You probably need to wait for quite a few years before you can go, I'll watch The Departed
Whereas
again.
There's so much in The Wolf of Wall Street happening just so quickly.
Yeah. All right, George. Now we're moving on to your first round of co-star countdown.
Got it.
I'm going to give you an actor, and then I'm going to give you a bunch of their co-stars. You have to tell me what film they are in together.
Okay.
Your first co-star countdown actor is Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, crikey, okay.
He's been around.
He has.
He's done a lot. He's in many films, and he's been with many co-stars. George, are you ready? George, name the Joaquin Phoenix movie from his co-star. Ready? Mel Gibson.
Signs.
Yes, Russell Crowe.
Gladiator.
Yes. Bryce Dallas Howard.
Pass.
Village. Reese Witherspoon.
Inherent Vice.
Walk the Line is what I was going for.
But she's in Inherent Vice.
Casey Affleck.
Casey Affleck.
I'm still here. Vanessa Kirby.
Napoleon.
Yes. Robert De Niro.
Joker.
Yes. Nathan Lane. New film.
New film. Nathan Lane.
Beau is Afraid. Oh. Scarlett Johansson.
The one he did. This is so hard.
Her. Josh Brolin. You already said it. Inherent Vice.
Oh.
Rooney Mara.
Stop! I don't like it.
You really struggled today.
Rooney, where did they? Mary Magdalene.
Yes. Emma Stone.
Emma Stone. Joaquin Phoenix. Emma Stone. I don't know.
Irrational Man. Last one. John C. Reilly. The Sisters Brothers. The fireworks on our end.
That's
you really
so
struggle
hard.
With that
That's
one.
It's really hard.
It is hard.
Because he's got such a niche filmography.
He does jump around. This next one is actually, I thought, a bit harder because I thought you'd do well on that one.
Oh, Christ.
We'll go for that. How many did you get? Did you get any faster than George? Right, George, your next actor for co-star countdown is none other. Sorry, fireworks on our end.
It's Diwali.
The next actor in Co-Star Countdown is none other than Cate Blanchett.
Right.
Or Cate Blanchett, as the French would say.
Carte Blanche.
Carte Blanche. Ready? Tell me which...
Name the Cate Blanchett movie from the co-star.
Ready? You have to name me the Cate Blanchett film from her co-star. Ready? Mark Strong.
Tar.
Yes. Rooney Mara. Christmas.
Carol.
Yes. Jeff Goldblum.
With Cate Blanchett.
Taika Waititi.
Thor Ragnarok.
Sandra Bullock. They're all women.
Ocean's 8.
Yes. Brad Pitt.
Benjamin Button.
Yes.
Chris Case, Benjamin Button.
Viggo Mortensen.
Or Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Any of them.
Alec Baldwin.
Blue Jasmine.
Yes. Leonardo DiCaprio. Recent.
Don't Look Up.
Yes.
Who's she in that?
Yes, she's like the news reporter with Tyler Perry.
That's right.
Shia LaBeouf. Terrible movie.
Disturbia?
No. Indiana Jones, The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Russell Crowe.
Russell. Oh, God.
Robin Hood. Bradley Cooper.
Stop. Oh, my God. Bradley Cooper. Kate Blanchett. I can't see them together.
Nightmare Alley. Leonardo DiCaprio again.
Again?
Yeah. Planes.
Trains. No. Planes.
The Wattiator.
Aviator.
Yeah. Judi Dench.
Shakespeare in Love.
No, no, George. No. She's not in that.
What on a what?
What on a what? Notes on Scandal.
Yes. Last one. Matt Damon. The Monuments Men?
Oh, maybe.
I think she's in that.
I was going for The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yeah, but I think she's in The Monuments.
I'll give Monuments Men.
I've just remembered why we don't play this game anymore. Because I hate it.
You do. You were loving it last week. You were firing them off.
I'm not. I
you
really,
were loving it last
I
week.
I really have to be in the right frame of mind. That is hard. That is really hard.
I so like, for example, I did like Judi Dench, Notes of Scandal. It's kind of hard, even though you got that one. I think instead of doing Harrison Ford for Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, I did Shia LaBeouf.
But that's hard because it's like, she's not the lead in all these
she's
films.
She's the villain. No, she's not the lead.
And like Jeff Goldblum, like, why wouldn't you say Chris Hemsworth?
Because I thought it was too easy. I thought I'd make it hard on you, but you actually kind of struggled, which is fine. It's just funny that last week, and it's there for everyone to hear. He was like, oh, let's play more. Have you got another round? I gave him with more rounds.
I hubris. I got what I asked for, literally.
Well, if you're as exhausted as George, don't worry. That is the end of the episode. Guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Pop Kitchen. Don't forget, we post new episodes of this show every single Wednesday.
If you'd like to see that game cut into a 1 minute social on Instagram or TikTok, then you'd need to follow us on Instagram and TikTok and all other things. Like and subscribe and give us a full review and 5-star rating on Spotify and whatever podcast platform you're listening to. If they do reviews like Apple Podcasts do, comment on it, rate it, share it with your friends.
Subscribe to YouTube.
If you send it as a link to your friends saying listen to the show, all helps the algorithm.
Oh yeah, that'd be great. There's a share button on your Spotify. Yeah.
Add it to your story as well. That's a huge thing for us. We really appreciate it because we can't grow without your help and we really thank you for it. So I'm sorry, my brain is still fried from that game. Thank you for joining us for this week. Next week for episode 103.
Got Napoleon out there.
Napoleon out there and much more.
Much more.
See you then. Have a great week, guys. And don't forget, just before I do that, we got a bonus. Look out for that bonus coming.
It's coming Friday.
The Loki bonus.
Yeah. George Saw, The Killer, and How to Have Sex. And we discussed those. Go check it out on Friday. That's all.
Bye.
See you next week.
Bye.